Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Bally Bet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
There's no stopping Jim Brown on an effort like this. He goes over the top and into the end zone for his fifth touchdown of the day.
Have you ever seen an image of strength like this? A picture of power like this? Portrait of courage like this? Ask yourself these questions, because the answers tell you how superhuman this man really was. Ask yourself these questions, because his whole life, that's what Jim Brown was about.
We cannot make exception to these laws just because a person happens to be black or white.
Forcing the world to ask why things were the way they were, and how the rest of us could force change.
This is Jim Brown.
I mean, he had power. You ain't see nobody knock him out. Look at the film. You don't see nobody knock him back.
Most devastating ball carrier in the history of football.
He was born in the South, St. Simon's Island off the coast of Georgia in 1936, and raised in the North, a small town on Long Island, where his legend as an athlete began. Any sport Jim Brown played, he dominated. From football to basketball, to track, to lacrosse. Even though there's little video of him playing that last one, there were those who said there's never been a better lacrosse player who walked the earth. But football was the game that lifted him to stardom. First at Syracuse University, where he was an All-American, and then in Cleveland with the Browns. His NFL career began in 1957. And he played in the league for 9 years, absolutely dominating the sport and rewriting the record book, setting a new standard for how a running back could rule the game with a combination of speed, force, and will. But Jim Brown was so much more than arguably the greatest football player of all time. That was clear when he retired before he turned 30 to become a new kind of pioneer. A black action star in the movies. A Hollywood leading man who refused to be cornered into how the world cast him. And that was just the start of the legacy he built outside the football field. During the Civil Rights Movement, he was front and center in the fight to earn blacks economic opportunities. And in 1967, he organized the famed Cleveland Summit to support Muhammad Ali and his refusal to serve in Vietnam. Then, in the 1980s, he founded the AmeriCan program to provide outreach to gang members and kids in juvenile detention facilities to give them education, hope, and a chance where no one else would.
We have changed many, many lives. And as I stand here right now, our people can carry out the work. They don't need me. And when I leave here, they can still carry out the work and they don't need me.
Even if he sometimes looked like Superman, Jim Brown wasn't a perfect man. But he was one of the most important figures ever to make a mark in the landscape of sports and society. He changed the game of football with his play. He redefined the limits of what a black man could be in America through his strength, his power, and his courage. He never stopped looking for ways to make the country better for those of us who followed in his footsteps. Rest in power, Jim Brown. We'll keep doing the work in your name.
Incredible stuff there as we welcome into Cleveland Browns Daily. Bo and Gibby here, and we'll have Joe Thomas and Deke and Bubba Ventrone is going to join us at the bottom of the hour as well. Obviously, we were off the air Friday when the news broke of the great Jim Brown's passing. I won't pretend to know Jim Brown or to have – I think we've had him on once or twice in the time that I've been here, once for sure that I remember. But what I can tell you just from the standpoint of there's a couple of instances where you do this job long enough and you get a cross pass or be in the same room with greatness. And even amongst greatness, there are those that elevate. And the only other instances that I can recall being in a room with greatness where greatness elevates even amongst the great was Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali. And Jim Brown had that type of gravity to him. When he walked into a room, and we were lucky enough to see him around the facility from time to time, when he walked into a room with NFL stars, or certainly that the images are making the rounds of LeBron bowing to him in an Eastern or NBA or Eastern Conference final game a few years ago, those images of the greatest, most important, best athletes, and when Jim Brown walked in the room, it stood still. I've been in a room with Michael Jordan. It had the similar effect. And I've been in a room with Muhammad Ali, and it had a similar effect. There was a gravity to the man. There was an awesomeness in the truest sense of the word to the man. We've had some time now to reflect back on the accomplishments, the athletic accomplishments. They're just stunning. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous what was accomplished across many sports fields. It's remarkable what was done in the name of civil rights in a time where it could not have been more difficult to do so. As the piece said, was not a perfect man, had his flaws, but fought till the dying end. And when you think about the Cleveland Browns as an operation, it is Paul Brown, it is Jim Brown, they are linked forever. And there's a reason that statue is the one that's out in front of the stadium. Obviously, Otto joined as well. But he is, we are forever linked to him and him to us. And his greatness transcends anything that you've seen before or since. Gibby, obviously, you've crossed paths with him more than I from the standpoint of been around a little bit longer, been in town a little bit longer. What jumps out to you on the man in terms of your recollections?
You know, when you see players and you have relationships with players, you call them by their first name. Mm-hmm. Hey, Joe, you know, yeah. Deke, mm-hmm. you know, the nickname here, nickname sure. there. Anytime he walked into the room, it was Mr. Brown.
That's right.
Like, and I don't know if he necessarily – if it bothered him one way or the other, or if he wanted to be called, it was always Mr. Brown. Like when I started doing this 11 years ago, mm-hmm. it was always Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
Mr. Brown is in the building today.
That's right. That's
Mr.
it.
Brown is at practice today.
That's right.
And you were like, okay, well, that's a big deal. Where's he at? Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to go by and say hi. Mm-hmm. You don't know me from a hole in the ground.
No.
It's okay, but like – my father knows who you are.
Yep.
My uncles know who you are. And that's because they watched you live and in person do what you did.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mr. Brown is in the building. Yeah, that certainly remembered that a lot.
Yes, anytime – like, yeah. It was when Mr. Brown was in the building from a security standpoint, you know, you'd walk in
yeah.
– I didn't necessarily need to know. Like,
no, but
I'm not anybody. But it was, by the way, Mr. Brown is all in the building.
Yeah, that's true. That is that resonates when you say that. He's a force of nature, man. And you look back and you think about as a rookie out of Syracuse. Running for almost 1,000 yards and 13 touchdowns in 8 games. He had 986 in 8 games. Broke the record. He had 6 touchdowns in a single game. They drafted him 6th overall. He is 237-yard performance in his 9th game of his rookie year. It was a record that stood for almost 14. The rookie record stood for 40 years. It was a single-game league record for 14 when he did that all the way back in his rookie season. He is still the only rookie to be named MVP of the National Football League. That happened. He was that. I'm reading Poizel's piece. He read it over the weekend and pulled it up here again in terms of summarizing. And there's a great quote from Jim talking about Paul saying, Coach Paul Brown liked me. He said to me, you're my running back. You're my running back. It was the sweetest words I've ever heard as a professional football player. And as Poizel writes, for seven of the next 8 years, Brown led the league in rushing yards, became the first player to ever score 100 career touchdowns, an accomplishment only eight other players have achieved, despite the league expanding to its 16 games in 1978 and 17 in 2021. Brown's accolades came when the NFL had a 12-game season, the first 4 years of his career, and 14 in his final five. He also, of course, shocked the sports world with one of the more shocking retirements at the time in 1966 when he retired from the league coming off of a 1,544-yard season with 17 touchdowns to pursue an acting career. Did so on the set of The Dirty Dozen and then went on to appear in, what, 50 films and television?
Which I had no idea about.
So active, yeah. The last thing I remember seeing him in was Any Given Sunday, and any scene he was in that, he crushed. I mean, he's with Pacino,
yeah,
and he's crushing it. I just watched that last year. I hadn't thought about it forever, and I watched it last year. And even next to one of the greatest actors of all time, like he's just chewing the scenery with him. He was so there was that, and then of course there's the off field when you talk about what he did for civil rights, the Cleveland Summit, of course, with Kareem and Bill Russell, and everybody came here to be on Muhammad Ali's side during the Vietnam War protests back in 1967. So all of that happened. Part of the what's now known as the Black Economic Union. Like, he stuck his neck out for social and civil rights at a time where it could not have been more difficult to do it. I mean, this was, man, 1968 in our country. Whew. And he went yeah. into every room and he said, I got this. And everybody looked for his guidance on it. This is a quote from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. For me, that picture signifies the increasing willingness of Black Americans to come out of their comfort zone and confront the powers that be on the issues that were important to us. And it's an image of four people sitting at the table left to right are Bill Russell, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And who was in the center? Muhammad Ali and Jim Brown.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he lived his life the way he wanted to.
Yeah.
He walked away from football and became a silver screen legend.
Yeah.
and then moved into the civil rights and then, you know, founded AmeriCan.
Yeah, that's like, true, right?
And everything he did there, everything he left his mark everywhere he went. Like, he just... what he did for this country mm-hmm. and what he did on the football field. I mean, the football field's almost almost minuscule compared to...
Yeah.
And yet, if you talk to most people that have been around the game, he's one of the top three greatest football players ever.
I think when you do the... Anytime you do the... If you extend it beyond the quarterback position because of what has become an over-dependence on the quarterback position in the sport, when you do greatest... player, regardless of position, you know, it's Jerry Rice, it's Lawrence Taylor, and it's Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Like, those are the guys that feel like they elevate, you know, even amongst the best. Yeah, it's, you know, the other thing that I think has been really cool just since I've been doing this with you guys is the, I think, like, what the Haslam family had done for Jim was great in terms of how they really put their arms around Jim. With the statue and the various things that have been done. And I know we'll have Joe on in a little less than an hour and give his perspective, but he was in the years that I've been doing this, Gibby, he was, when health provided and allowed, he was omnipresent. He was here a lot. We saw him a lot.
Yeah, his own golf cart.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Mr. Brown's golf cart.
That's right.
Someone's going to drive. One of our security details is going to drive him around.
Yeah.
And he took the time. He talked to every player.
Yeah.
Anyone that came over, he would talk to.
Yeah. 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 And so that's a tough one. You know, I think it'll be interesting. We've been such, you know, all of the guys on the social team have been so great with this over the weekend and everything that's online. And I know we're going to hit on some of this stuff, the 32 things about Jim Brown and all these other things. But he is so much of the identity of what made the Browns great and made them one of the most successful franchises in the history of the NFL. So much of it is at his feet. It really is.
Yeah.
it's a stunning thing when you look back at that time with Otto and then obviously Jim Brown and all that he had done.
Look at the Patriots tweet with Belichick.
Boy, that hit, didn't it?
I mean,
that hit different. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, folks, the Patriots tweeted out, this was on Friday, and it was, I forget the exact verbiage on it. It was like greatness and the greatest or something like that, and it was a picture. Belichick does this. We've talked about it before with Donovan.
Yes.
Belichick is very dialed in and appreciative of Brown's history from his time here and also just as a football historian. And so one thing that he always does anytime the Patriots play here is before they go to the plane – he takes the bus to the Jim Brown statue, and they all get out, and they go look at it, and they put out an image of Belichick looking up at Jim Brown's statue.
Yeah, it says, a legend and a leader, were deeply saddened to learn of the loss of the NFL great Jim Brown.
And it's the image of Belichick looking up at Jim Brown.
Yep, I just retweeted it from the Browns Daily account.
Yeah. So,
But it had its effect. I mean, the NFL rushing leader – going forward will always be known as the Jim Brown Rushing Award winner from that season. And Emmett Smith and Barry Sanders announced that at the NFL Honors in February. Mm-hmm.
Barry always said that his dad, no matter what he did, his dad would always say, well, you're not Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Like, he always held that over him.
Yeah.
He's like, no matter what you did, you're not Jim Brown.
Yeah.
It is a
monumental loss for the football community, for the country, in terms of what he did off the field as well. And I know there a lot of people are hurting here in Berea, and I know that conversations are underway now for, you know, what will be probably at some point a celebration of life.
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be. All any of us want, and none of us will be able to. I mean, you're not built in the way that he was, but you just want to live a life of significance.
Yes.
In your own world, and he most certainly did. Certainly had his flaws. No man is perfect.
Correct.
But also, I saw something this weekend. I don't even know how it crossed paths or how I saw it. It was after it hopped on Twitter after one of the days of youth sports and was kind of scrolling through, and I saw somebody put, I don't know whose idea it was. I apologize. I don't know where I saw it. I just remember seeing it. It was somebody saying that a really cool thing the Browns could do is to have every player wear 32 on the helmet. So you know how we have the throwback.
I saw Rhoda. Rhoda.
Was it Kenny who did it?
I don't know.
Okay. It could have been there. I don't know. But I saw that. I think, God, that's it. Because we have open sides of our helmets, and to put a 32 on, so every player on our team has 32 on the side of the helmet. And I got news, as I was thinking about it, I know it seems crazy, or maybe it doesn't. I thought maybe that's the permanent Browns helmet. Maybe the permanent Browns helmet is that with a 32 on it, and that's it. And that's the way you do it. I don't know. But I just thought for this year at least, that one struck with me because how cool would that be? To see that 32 on the side of the Browns helmet all year on every player.
Well, I mean, that
I love that.
That's better than any patch.
I think. I think, I mean, you think of a guy, jeez, I think that would be such a cool thing. It might have been Kenny. That rings true that might have been where I saw it.
Yeah.
But I saw this weekend, and I stopped my tracks. I'm like, that's it. That's what you do.
Yeah. And frankly, I feel like every team in the league should have a 32 patch.
There will be. It'll be a lot
Russell.
Bill Russell. Everybody's got the six. I think you'll see 32s around on everybody in the league. I'm sure that'll be the case.
Yeah.
He's that type of – he is on an American sports Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely.
That's what that guy's all about. So we'll do our best to honor him appropriately today. Give me a great job out of you. We got Hoff to talk about it. We'll have Deke to talk about it as well, so that'll come up in the second hour of the program. We'll get to some of these other facts about Jim Brown. It's stunning, the list of accomplishments and the great breadth of accomplishment that he has. We will get to that. Bubba Ventrone will be on set with us here in about 10 minutes or so at the undisclosed location. We're off and running. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And renew your home for the last time with Renew Home Exteriors Siding and Roofing Products. Bo here for the Renew Home Exteriors team. Don't spend all day with the high-pressure sales guys. Who needs it? Your time's too valuable. The team at Renew won't waste your day with hours of negotiating. Instead, they offer an upfront, fair price to make your project easy, and that's the idea, isn't it? This month, take advantage. Pre-pandemic pricing plus no interest or payments for 24 months. Visit RenewHomeExteriors.com. Superior product, superior service. Again, RenewEstimate.com for more on that. Reflecting on the passing of Jim Brown and just an incredible life. We had this on the – I really encourage you to go see what the digital guys have done. Poizel's worked really hard on a lot of this stuff. We've
our
seen
video
the video
production.
Guys have just crushed it. Like some of these plays that they've pulled up, this old archival footage, it's absolutely stunning stuff. There's a list of 32 things that are still true about Jim Brown. For example, I would not have known, despite playing in 118 games, he still ranks among the NFL's all-time leading running backs in rushing average. He's third, rushing touchdown sixth, rushing yards 11th. He was number one until Walter Payton broke it, right?
I think so.
And like, then in Payton got by Emmett.
He's like 11th now.
Right, because we've had a lot of guys. Yeah, we've had a lot of guys that have stacked. I mean, you're playing – you know, you go from – he played 12 and 14-game seasons. Now you're playing 16 – you've been playing 16 forever, now 17-game season. So it's just a totally different – he's a member of the 50th anniversary, 75th anniversary, 100th anniversary. I promise you this, he'll be a member of the 125th anniversary and the 150th anniversary all-NFL team. Won that title in 1964, helped the Browns to three championships at that point. It's interesting on the – we had that in the video that you played off the top about the lacrosse stuff. It's so interesting how that line about have despite no one having actually seen him play, like it was kind of a little bit of a Bo Jackson mythical factor to it. Like those who did, it was like, no, he's the best lacrosse player of all time. It's not particularly close. And that was the end of it. In fact, he's enshrined in the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame in 1984. So he's been in that. He's been in the NFL Hall of Fame since 1971. He's one of those ones. I don't know when's the last time you've been to Canton, but we go a couple times a year. Boys love it. And his bust is one of those ones that just jumps out when you walk in. It's one of those first ones to the left, and it just absolutely jumps out when you've done it. No Brown has worn number 32. As we said, I love the idea of putting the 32 on the helmet this year.
Yes.
I think, like, on the side of the helmet, like a logo, I think that would be absolutely incredible. The 9 Pro Bowls, 3-time NFL MVP, as I mentioned, still the only rookie to be an MVP of the league. He did that in 1957, and then he backed it up in 58, then again won the MVP in 1965. He's the only non-quarterback in NFL history to win the award 3 times. As I mentioned, NFL rookie the elite year in 57 as well. First player in NFL history to eclipse 10,000 rushing yards. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts. Syracuse retired as number 44. The acting, as I mentioned, I know a lot of people go Dirty Dozen, and that, you know, if you're of a certain age, for me it was Any Given Sunday. And I mean, it's pretty amazing when you see him in scenes with Al Pacino, and he's right there dominating and holding the screen with Pacino. I mean, he just had that charisma. We led the show with this. He's one of those few people that even amongst great, he elevates. There's a gravity to him. There's an awesomeness to his persona that was just ever present anytime that you were around. The last year of his career, 1544, the total was 677 more yards than the runner-up Gale Sayers. He was literally lapping the field. He was that good, and he will be missed tremendously by all of us. Our new special teams coordinator, Bubba Ventrone, up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Elk & Elk Serious Lawyers, Serious Injuries. Call 1-800-ELK-OHIO for a free case review. Elk & Elk is a proud partner of the Cleveland Browns. It's a real treat. New special teams coordinator Bubba Ventrone joining us here at the undisclosed location on the west side of Cleveland. Sir, thank you so much for taking the time, bud. We were talking off air. Obviously, all of us in the Browns family are talking about the loss of Jim Brown, and you've had several instances, your time in New England, obviously your time here as well. Let's start with, because we actually alluded to this with Bill, and the Patriots put out an image of Bill, how he would stop the bus at the stadium for the statue that's been out there since 16 to look at Jim, and they put out an image of Bill Belichick staring at Jim. But that wasn't lip service. That was put into action with you guys when you were at the Patriots, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2007, we played in the Super Bowl out in Arizona, and we had practiced at Arizona State University. I want to say it was either a Wednesday or a Thursday practice. We're in the locker room post-practice, and Bill brought the team up in a group or whatever to just talk to us or whatever, and he surprised everybody with Jim Brown being there to be able to talk to our team. So that was obviously a great time to be able to have an interaction with him even before I came to Cleveland. And then obviously whenever I played here from 9 to 12, had a number of conversations with him, picked his brain quite a bit anytime he was around. So he was a joy to have been able to meet.
One of those guys that there was an awesomeness to him that even amongst greats, he kind of went above. And it's amazing the way that he would stop current players who obviously have never seen him play and would be – I mean, you're looking at YouTube, but it's one of the blessings of being a Cleveland Brown, right, is that every once in a while Jim Brown would walk into the building.
Yeah, so I would say I wish that I would have had an opportunity to be able to see him play in that time. But from – when you hear a guy like Bill Belichick talk about how Jim Brown's the best football player that he's ever seen play, then, you're pretty taken back by a statement like that. So, obviously a tremendous player and even better person and, advocate for, everything he's done in the community.
Yeah, it's remarkable. In terms of this first time we've had a chance to talk to you since you've been back, and of course we're here as a player, when you think of – What made this decision to come home the one that it felt like for you it was the time for you to do it?
I like how you said come home.
This is what I do.
Come home, yeah. And
it feels like home, right?
Yeah, it does feel like home. I'm from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But Cleveland is home to me.
Yeah.
Cleveland is home to me. I had a lot of great years here, obviously, when I played here as a special teamer. We had good units back then. Met a lot of great people that are still involved with the organization, and Joe Sheehan, Brad Mellon, guys like that. Obviously, Mr. Haslam, bought the team in my last season here, so it's great to come back to familiar faces and just a passionate fan base that loves football. The city loves football, so I'm excited to be back here and have an opportunity to win.
When you're around this fan base, when you're around this organization, when you walk in the building, we're on Lou Groza Boulevard for crying out loud, and you walk in there and you see all of it. It is a place that is starved for winning. What is it about that drives? I know it drives Kevin. I know it drives AB. It drives everybody in the organization now. It feels like there's a relentlessness to try to achieve that now. How much of that was part of your in your head about coming back here? The realization that my God, if we ever win here, this is going to be pretty nuts.
Well, I feel that just looking at the roster, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent on the roster. I feel like there's a great opportunity to win, but obviously and ultimately we have to be able to instill it in the players to be able to play selfless team first football. And I feel like that's the way that we're going to be able to win. Everything's got to be geared at team first, put the team first, willing to do whatever it takes to win. Cause we clearly have enough talent to do so. And you can see that, just being out on the field, the type of guys we have running around, it's pretty impressive.
What are things that you look for in a guy to play on your units?
Well, first off, if you're going to play in the kicking game, you have to have that mentality. You have to be fearless, physical, tough, fast, smart, disciplined. The things that I'm trying to instill in our players is we're a fundamentally sound football team that's going to drill it over and over again. The fundamentals and techniques that are necessary to execute in each six phases of the kicking game. And then, like I said before, we're going to be disciplined and we're going to make good decisions. And then lastly, we're going to be a selfless football team. We have to have buy-in from whether you're a four-phase starter in the Big Four, you play on the field goal unit, you play on the field goal block unit, or you're a starter that plays one to two phases or a spot starter. We need buy-in and contributions from everybody on the team, coaches, players, backups, starters, if we're going to be good in the kicking game and ultimately having a chance to impact, you know, football games.
Yeah, listen, you talk, man. I just think accountability. It feels like there's a lot.
Listen, that's the number one thing for me. It's like if we're talking about winning and we're talking about, you know, getting to the playoffs and getting to where we want to be, it's got to be everybody doing what it takes to win every game. So I think it's selfless accountability, your teammates, coaches, staff, you know, the organization, do what's right, and let's put the team first and win.
You have you've played for some incredible coaches. You've worked for some incredible coaches. What are things we mentioned Belichick? Let's take him for example. Are there things that you pick up from Bill? You'd be crazy not to, right? That you've instituted into your philosophy to make it your own.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, I learned a lot from Bill as a player and as a coach. You know, he really gave me my foundation, right? For the house that I'm building is in my football coaching playing career. However, the things that I put into the house are things that I've gathered from other coaches that I've been around, observing, studying, watching film, studying players. So I have, obviously, I have a lot of things that are my own. But yeah, and honestly, I'm excited to implement what I did in Indy, build on what I've done there and improve and bring them here, and hopefully we can get these guys, you know, hitting the ground rolling this week into OTAs.
You when you came in here, we were talking about what that this is a nice this is now we can go right a little bit now we get a little bit of go when you this yeah. time of year. What spring in the step are you look to seeing from the guys, and as you go into this week, what are some things you want to get accomplished?
You know, the last few weeks in phase two, phase one, we've done a lot of on field drill work. You know, pretty much on air type stuff. So now we'll be able to have, you know, looks with bodies in there. So we'll be able to, you know, elaborate on our scheme, install some more things. And that way, once we head into training camp, we have a really good base and understanding for what we're trying to get accomplished once we put the pads on.
You were, as a player who was a, you're a hair on fire guy, literally. I mean, there's this image I have up of you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fantastic mop you have, buddy. That thing looks awesome. But the hair on fire guy, how are you different from as a coach and than you were as a player? How much of it do you pull into the coaching?
I learned a lot as a player. I did. I learned a lot as a player. I studied well. I feel like I was always prepared. However, it's different. You think you know everything as a player, and you don't. And you don't. And you learn a lot whenever you get into the coaching ranks and the time that goes into it and the detail and why things are being done, why, you know, why we're doing the things we're doing and why we're doing this drill, why we're taking this rep, why we're having guys rep in multiple spots. You're trying to build on roster depth and have position flexibility amongst the players to give each player as much value as you can to your roster. The more things you can do, the better. And what I'm trying to do right now is just train as many guys as I can in multiple phases. That way, in case we get into the season and I need someone to come up and play, this guy can be plugged in. So trying to build as much, you know, I would say position flexibility and cross-training as possible at this point.
What are your philosophies in the return game?
Philosophies in the return game, number one, the number one thing is get the ball back to the offense. Okay, we're going to protect the football. We're going to make good decisions fielding the football. But then it really goes into, as far as executing a return, it's the fundamentals of the return that give you the best opportunity to make big plays. So I think that it starts early in the down. Obviously, our drops and our setups are going to be important. And obviously how we're setting up on the football and attacking coverage. And then obviously knowing how those teams are, you know, are attacking us. So I think that that's really the second part of it.
You know, it's interesting, the way the league is set up now, and especially in the AFC. I mean, we did this last week on the show. I think there's probably like 10 teams in the AFC that feel like they're Super Bowl contenders. And I don't think that that's hyperbole. I think 10 of them, you go to their facility, they'd say, yeah, we can go win the Super Bowl this year. And all of them have great offenses. Many of them have great defenses. In a league where there are so little margin for error, so much of it comes down to your units.
Yeah.
It really does, man. I mean, we've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know. And that's the one thing that I always try to stress to our players. You just don't know which play it's going to be. So you have to take the field like this is going to be the play. This is the yeah. opportunity, because different from offense and defense where you're having 60 to 80 plays a game on each side of the ball in a kicking game, you know, you're probably going to have between 25 and 30 reps in the game. You may only have a handful of opportunities to return the ball, to actually run the pressure that you have script or schemed up against the opponent. So you got to be able to capitalize on every opportunity, you know, and take advantage of everything that's given to you. So, you know, don't take anything lightly. Not treat every play like it's your last, but treat every play like it's super important, and it could be the play that impacts the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to ask you about Cade. We certainly saw they drafted him here after what he did at LSU, where he's one of the great collegiate kickers. Last year, up and down, searching for that consistency. What have your conversations with him been like, and what is your approach to place kicker and trying to get him to be everything that he was drafted to be?
Cade, all the specialists have been great to this point.
Yeah,
he's got a great work ethic. He's a hard worker. He's very detailed. He's, you know, very honed in on his mechanics and almost too detailed at times. What we want to do with him is we're trying to get him to be as consistent as possible. And if there is a hiccup or if there is a mistake or an error, we're trying to put that to bed as fast as we can and not let those things compound. So he's done a good job to this point. He's hit the ball well. He's definitely got a strong and explosive leg. I think that, you know, a fresh start, you know, sometimes the volume can take a toll on a player as well. I think that, you know, hitting less balls is going to be beneficial to him. So we're excited to work with him, and he's done a good job to this point.
It's kind of like a golfer, right, with a golf swing. Like, you can overcook it.
You can definitely overcook it.
You know what I mean?
You can definitely overcook it. You know, like, for me, like, I've coached players, and I've been around players that like to hit. Like, Steve Gostkowski in New England did not want to hit a lot of balls, whereas Adam Vinatieri wanted to hit 100 balls, and he wanted to kick balls from 60 plus every day. Steve wasn't like that. Phil Dawson was kind of like in between.
Yeah.
But I think Cade, I think that we can take some volume off of him, you know, save his leg a little bit, be, you know, precise, and I think that we'll get the results we need.
You obviously played here when Josh was at his peak in the return game, and there's a gift to that, right? A fearlessness of being that and being able to do that. Are there guys on this roster, maybe not to that level, but that have that in them that you've been able to identify in the return game?
Yeah, we have explosive returners. We do. Last year, Jerome Ford finished out the year doing a really nice job in the kick return phase. He's an explosive player with good size. He's got good vision. He's an aggressive runner downhill. I like him a lot. Jalen Darden is a kid that, you know, they acquired midseason last year that is an instinctive player. He's not the biggest guy, but he's got good vision and feel. And then obviously Jakeem Grant, you know, if he can get back to where he was pre-injury, that guy's explosive, and he's got the ability to change a game in both kick and punt return. So I think that when you're covering guys that are that explosive and that dynamic, it definitely, first off, it heightens your blocking team's right responsibilities and technique. Like, everyone's, when you're blocking for a guy like Cribbs, you know you have a chance to legitimately score every play. So I'm just telling you, like, when you're a core player blocking for a guy like that, and you know that we have the ability to score, you're going to block a little bit harder. Yeah. You just are.
Yep.
And you're going to do a little bit extra. And that's what it takes. So, like, to bust those returns, it's not just doing your job. It's like doing your job, and then something else has to happen.
Yep.
So, you know, fortunately, when I was here, we had a bunch of returns for touchdowns. I'm hoping that we can get a few this year. That'd be freaking great.
Of those things. It's still the loudest any NFL stadium is a special return touchdown. Punt or kick. It doesn't happen as much, but when it happens.
I'm kind of getting chills right now.
I'm telling you, man. That's it. It's so loud.
Listen, kickoff return or punt return for a touchdown.
I know.
And block punts. You block a punt.
Yep.
Ugh. Listen. I'm gonna do my best.
Yeah.
Me and Bravo are gonna do our best to put our guys in situations that we can make some big plays.
Man, I know you got to get to a meeting. This was great. Thank you so much for coming by.
No problem. Really, thanks for having
me. Bubba Ventrone. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back into Cleveland Browns Daily. That was fun. Bubba Ventrone. That guy's got some juice.
Yes, he does.
Right? Yeah. That was impressive.
That's I've been hounding our good friend Dan Murphy for a while now, and I'm like, Dan, we got to get him in.
Yeah.
Like, let's bring him in studio. And he's busy. He's getting
– you know. No, I wasn't kidding. He literally had a meeting with the boss he had to get over to. So that's
– Yeah. We were like, what meeting do you have at 2 o'clock that's so important? He's like, well, you want me to throw it out
there. You want
me
to know. If you really want to know. Yes, we do. No, but I think when, you know, the question I – like, it was more of a statement, bad job out of me, but kind of the question statement I posed him about, you know, this year in the AFC – there is no margin.
No.
It's going to be for the vast majority of these teams, and there's, you know, 10 to upwards of 12 that look themselves in the mirror and say we're Super Bowl contenders. It's going to come down to a couple of plays, 4 or 5 plays. And what it can't be, you know, Z and I talked about this all the time through the years. The kicking, you know, the minimum requirement is don't be negative. Like, you don't have to be positive. Just don't cost us, right? And last year was frustrating in that sense because it cost us.
Yeah, well, and I'm not even talking last year. I'm talking over the course of the 10 years we've been doing this.
Yeah.
Like, you're in the booth, and the kicker misses a PAT.
Yeah.
Or a kicker kicks the ball out of bounds on a kickoff in a close game.
Yeah.
Or the punter shanks one. And it doesn't – I'm not saying it happens every week, but there are when it happens
– yeah.
Everybody in the booth looks at each other.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to say anything because you're like, that's going to be a problem later on, I feel like.
Yep.
This one, that will come back on us. Yep. And 90% of the time, you're right about it.
Yeah, it does. It does. So there's an accountability to him, certainly. I like what he said about Cade, you know, that, you know, sometimes too much.
I found that interesting.
You know, just get out of your head a little bit. Just do it. Do what you're able to do.
And it was interesting. You know, he talked about New England. And Vinatieri would want to kick till his leg fell off every day. And kick 60-yarders.
Right.
And Gostkowski didn't want to do that.
Yeah. It is like – it's golf. Kicking is like golf swing.
Yeah.
It really is that type of deal.
It's muscle memory. And it better be muscle memory come December.
Yeah.
When it matters down on that lakefront.
Yeah, it is. There is that part of it. So – And he was excited. Like, before we even started in the break, he was, you could tell how excited he was for this. So this is the first day of OTAs. So it's this week and then next, and then mandatory minicamp is June 5th through the 8th. So this is officially OTAs. So now you're going to be able to get everybody out there. There's no contact or anything at this point. It's just getting everybody out there, and you can do some shell stuff, right?
Correct. So
I lose track because I feel like they change it.
Tell me about it. I'm looking for what the schedule is, what the rules are here, rules of engagement.
Yeah, I know it's not like how it used to be.
And I want to say, like, no live contact is permitted, but 7-on-7, 9-on-7, and 11-on-11 drills are permitted.
So that's what I was saying. That's that shell stuff that I've talked about where,
yep,
you know, you can – no contact, but you can at least get a bunch of guys out on a field and kind of make understand where you're at. So that's huge. And that's like the real work is starting now to be done. That they're laying foundation, and this week they're going to be able to put in some – you know, they're really going to be able to put in some footers and get some stuff going here. And I'm not sure for my contractor guys if I have the order of that correct, but I think you get the gist.
Well, and so you'll have OTAs Monday through Thursday this week.
Yeah.
Next week is a little wrinkle, but I believe that they will be here on Memorial Day.
Okay.
Monday through Thursday, because Tuesday next week is golf outing. So I believe that they will be here on Monday.
Probably then.
So they'll have 7 workouts total, and then and I bet – I would think they might even work out Tuesday morning beforehand, before they come to the golf outing. We've seen that in the past.
Yeah.
You know, because the golf outing is optional. And I would say this as well. Like, again, this week and next week are voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
I think you start seeing more players coming in because it leads up to the following week, 2 weeks from now, when mandatory minicamp starts.
Right, right.
And that's the Monday through Thursday.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, you've got 7, you know, at this point now, you've got 7 practices over the course of the next 2 weeks in OTAs where you're learning the playbook and you're starting to – get stuff on the football field. Like, you've had the classroom
right stuff.
And
now you can physically get out there. Are there media availabilities on these OTAs?
Yeah, we will Wednesday. Okay. Hoping to have a player or two at our undisclosed location.
That's right.
Wednesday.
See if we can work out transportation for them.
Yeah, exactly. Getting that done this week and next week.
Okay.
We'll have our opportunity on Wednesdays, both Wednesdays. So we'll see. We'll see who's here and who joins us, and then obviously at the golf course next week, we'll have some availability. We'll be on one of the golf holes.
Like where we were by
like
the clubhouse?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fun. That's the perfect place. Put us on that one where we have the
– Zagura can hit bombs.
Yeah, people can have Zagura – they can have Zagura hit a shot for them, and we can play, and then we can put it on the green.
Oh, yeah. Zagura tried –
that short little par 4, that's the one we want to be on.
Yep. It's the Britton Cole hole.
Cole called a shot. I mean, let's be honest. The man called a shot. Like, we're not going to see anything quite like that probably ever again.
No.
And plus the spontaneity of the moment, you know, that's the other thing with Cole on that moment was it wasn't like he wasn't prepared for it, just stepped up, made the claim.
I believe Z tried to get into this and play, and I said.
You thought he should play?
The appropriate people came to me and said, hey.
Yeah.
Just double checking, and I'm like, yeah, he's available after 3 o'clock.
Right, that's right.
He can join the group around 3,
yeah,
and still get in at least 9.
He's had 76 vacations, so he can at least.
I mean, he likes to talk trash about my vacations, but I believe I've always put mine around a weekend.
I think he's winning.
Yeah.
So yeah, he can do the heavy lifting with me on Tuesday.
It's exciting, and you said it. In the interview with Bubba, going back to the Ventrone interview.
Yeah.
Like, coming home. Like, he made his teeth in the NFL here.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we'll have Hoff on in 5 minutes or so, but, like.
And you can ask him
about
it.
We'll ask him about it, but I remember we talked to him about it when he was hired, and he talked about him as a player and what he was. And, folks, if you just go to Bubba's Wikipedia page, there's a picture of him. It's in a Browns uniform.
The flowing man.
The hair is flying, and he is fired up, and that's what the dude's all about.
Yeah, and he wants to be the best.
Yeah.
And he wants his group to be the best. And because he's a former player,
yeah,
he's going to demand a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. He's juiced up, man. He's ready to go, and that was pretty obvious. The Hoff is ready to go. We'll get his perspective on Jim Brown, get his perspective on the offseason program. We're not very far away from speech time with the Hoff either, so we'll get to all of that. It's all coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
There's a new way to cheer on your Cleveland Browns with the help of your favorite four-legged companion, Barking Backers, presented by Milk-Bone, the Browns' newest club for pet parents worldwide. Sign up today at BarkingBackers.com. Barking Backers, the fan club for dogs. And now we head out on the Twisted Tea Hotline, joined by the Hoff, Joe Thomas. Buddy, great talking to you. Sadder circumstances than normal in that the passing of the great Jim Brown. You are one of those people who is of his ilk. In terms of accomplishments.
Hey, good morning, family. You're obviously president. Second week in a row, man.
I don't know what that was. Is Joe there? Do we have Joe?
I got you. I was wondering if it was going to be another one of those where I was
doing this again.
Are we doing this again?
He was going to just start making.
That's on me, guys. Sorry about that.
Making an impression.
Jeez. We're talking Jim Brown, and all of a sudden we got this on here. Okay. All right, Hoff. In terms of, as I was saying, your interactions with the late, great Jim Brown.
Yeah, obviously one of maybe the greatest football players of all time, but I think the big memory that I have that I'll take away is just those times where he would come into the cafeteria, whether it be a Saturday, the night before a game, or maybe during training camp when he would hang around the team and he'd just sit down at the table and he'd just break bread with you. And I think his wisdom and his knowledge of so many things in the world and his interest in all of the different players would really shine through in those moments, because he'd sit down and he didn't care who sat next to him, if it was an offensive lineman, a running back, a punter, a coach, and he would just sit there and he'd ask you questions and he wanted to talk about what you were interested in. He wanted to try to give you some wisdom, give you some insight, but also just kind of amaze you a little bit with some of the stories, regale you with some of the stories of what it was like playing back in the 50s and the 60s, and what it was like being maybe the greatest football player of all time.
There was, Gibby and I were talking about this, Hoff. There's a, when you'd go into the building, and I don't know if you guys were alerted of this, but for the rest of us, like when we would come in the building, like most times security would say, Mr. Brown's here today. Like it was known that Jim Brown was in the building. You know what I mean? Like, was there that for you guys from the stamp? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he was bigger than life to everybody. He was, I think, probably the only person in the building that everybody from ownership on down would call him Mr. Brown, because he deserved that type of respect. And I think the players, even though he played a long time before we were there, certainly the guys that are there now and the guys that I played with, but everybody knows the impact that he had on the game, the impact he had on social justice and trying to affect change in different communities. And I think that was probably the legacy that, you know, I'll remember him for the most, because I never did get to see him play other than highlights, which were amazing, by the way, watching a man that's bigger than all of his offensive linemen steamroll people one after another. Is always going to play well, no matter what generation. But I think just how important the lives of young men were, young Cleveland Browns players, and how much impact he tried to make in his community and throughout America. And he talked about his American program a lot to the players and tried to get guys involved. But he was just such an incredibly influential and impactful person that I just feel really blessed to be able to have sat there and got to know him through the years.
It's something when you, you know, and I very clearly never played here, but when you walk in the building and you see that the image of him, and it's something that if you've loved football, you've seen it your whole life, whether it's the slow motion of him running, or it's some of those black and white images or the image of him sitting on his football helmet. There's an image in one of the offices over there of him with a, he's got a like a rain slicker on. He just cast such a shadow, didn't he, Joe? Over the whole league, over the organization, everything, just almost super, almost like a superhero a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he was the original superstar in the game of football, and then the crossover that he made into movies and then into social justice, making sure that, you know, he was involved off the field, trying to make an impact throughout all of the country. Players in any generation gave him an enormous amount of respect. I mean, he was one of the few guys that didn't matter if it was a group of Hall of Famers, if it was, you know, the Joe Namath, if it was the greatest of the greats, when that man walked in the room, everybody stood up and stood a little bit straighter, right? They had just a different level of respect for him and what he did in his life and in his career.
You ever think about blocking for him?
I'm wondering, like, if the size of the man that Jim Brown was in relation to other offensive linemen and other football players of his generation existed today, would that mean he would be like Shaq? He'd be like 7 foot 400, but he'd run a 4.5. I'm just thinking.
I was thinking, man, yeah, like maybe like LeBron, fun. Like 6'8", 260, but runs like a 4.2. Like, it's like, wait, what?
Right.
This doesn't seem possible. He was that, though, right? I mean, he had that. It's funny it's that you bring that up. I don't know if people are aware, but you think about what an offensive lineman weighed in the 60s versus what Jim was. I mean, you weren't kidding. Like, that's not hyperbole. He was bigger than many of his offensive linemen.
No, he was. I mean, I think he played at, you know, 6'2", 220, something like that. And most linemen back then were 6'1", maybe 6'2", right around that 220. So he was really bigger than probably a lot of his linemen. And when you think about that, I mean, I played offensive tackle a few years ago. I was 6'6", 320 at the time. So even if he was almost that size, can you imagine 6'6", 300 pounds? Like, as big as your line, just steamrolling people? I mean, it's no wonder that he's the only man to average over, what, 5 yards a carry for a career or something. Just crazy like that. And I think that's part of the reason he had so much respect, because he was just a man among boys in his era of football. And you think about Nick Chubb, right? Obviously, we love Nick Chubb. We think he's a great running back. He's a freak. You know, you see the pictures of him versus, like, the high school kids that he played with when he was down in Georgia. And then you think, like, yeah, that was Jim Brown. Only Jim was even taller, because Nick's not a real super tall guy. He was 6'2", you know, back then. So it's just crazy to think about what he's one of the few players probably from the 60s that with his body could play in today's game, no doubt.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like the size, speed, strength. There's a little bit of a Wilt Chamberlain thing to it, where he was playing against people who were not of his ilk in any way, you know, so just dominant. And then it's interesting because, you know, you talk about, you know, retiring. So he retires on the set of the Dirty Dozen in London. He does so after a 1,500-yard season where the second-best rusher was Gale Sayers, who was 600 yards behind him. He does so after a 17-touchdown season. So in his prime, Hoff, he shut it down, certainly still with much football left to go. And we know that there are extenuating circumstances in terms of with Medell and all of that stuff. But also shut it down and then went on to have this acting career. Like, you know, everybody talks about the Dirty Dozen. That I'm not quite that old, but I certainly remember him in Any Given Sunday. And I was saying this to Gibby. Yeah. In Any Given Sunday, he's in a lot of scenes with Pacino and is up to it, man.
Mm-hmm. He was amazing. And that crossover effect that he had, being able to be the best player in football at the time, retire at his peak, and then seamlessly move into movies and do a lot of, you know, great shows, was amazing. Like, he was not trained as an actor, and to be able to just go right into it and capture with his leadership and his bravado on screen is completely remarkable. And I think just watching him off the field, he carried himself with such pride, and all he ever wanted was respect. And I think he got that, you know, on the movie screen. He got that when he was in the locker room. He got that post career. And I think that was one of the takeaways I got from him. You know, when you first get around, he's such an impressive, imposing figure. You're like afraid to go up to him and even talk to him, right? But when all of a sudden you see him sitting there in the lunchroom and you find yourself sitting at the same table, starting to ask a few questions, and he really opens up. And you realize, like, for him, he wants to be impactful. He wanted to really be involved in people's lives. And all he asked for in return was a little respect, you know? And yeah. It was really fun listening to the, sort of like the values that he had and what was important in his life and what he saw as a vision for the country, a vision for football players. It was really amazing. The wisdom that he shared was priceless.
You know, when you put together the all Cleveland Browns team, we're talking to the left tackle on that team, and the running back is Jim Brown. As we transition over to OTAs, which are happening now, we're off and running here. What needs to be accomplished offensively, especially Joe, this week? As you know, this will be now a full off season with Deshaun Watson. There's going to be some tweaks, obviously, offensively. What do you think needs to be accomplished over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think two things are huge. One, you want to find out what are the things that Deshaun does best. You know, what are we going to be able to hang our hat on? What are those five concepts in the passing game from a route concept standpoint that we can hang our hat on when we need to play and it's third and six, or we're in the red zone and we got to get a first down or the game's over? You know, what are those plays that we're really going to be able to hang our hat on? Same thing in the running game. Like, what are some of those plays where we can allow Deshaun Watson to use his legs to open up the defense a little bit for maybe somebody else? Maybe it's zone read, maybe it's RPO type stuff. But what are the things that he does well, that he sees the defense well, but also the personnel that's in front of him, running backs, tight ends, offensive line? Like, what are those things that we all do really well? And then you can kind of build on that. I think when you're trying to build any offense, you got to start with, all right, foundationally, at our core, who are we and what are we going to do best, where even if the other team knows what's coming, they can't freaking stop it. And I think that's the most important thing that you want to be able to find out right now, because then all the little iterations of those plays and the counters and the misdirections, they all play off of those core concepts. Like, when we had Kyle Shanahan, it was the outside zone. Strong side, it was weak side, and everything else played off of that, including the play action pass, including some of the cutback stuff. But that was the root of it. And then OTAs were when we learned the basics, the fundamentals, and we mastered those. And then from there, we were able to kind of become a good offense because all the other stuff dominoed and flowed from there. And so I think that's really what the coaches are definitely going to be impressing upon the team right now. Like, this is the time we find out what we can do and who we can be when we're at our best.
Huff, we haven't had a chance to talk with you since the acquisition of Za'Darius Smith. That one kind of dropped out of nowhere on Friday a couple of weeks ago. What do you make of that acquisition? It felt to us like it was – Z and I would talk all the time. It felt like something was needed, either whether it was in the middle or on the edge, but something else was needed on that defensive line. What do you make of that acquisition, and how much of a difference can that make?
You know, it reminds me a little bit of the conversation you and I had and you and Z had throughout the entire season last year. Like, we were sitting there in training camp, I remember, in August when we were getting taken away by those Nats. Gibby wouldn't give us a fan. I couldn't even see the field.
Sad.
The cloud of gnats was so thick on us.
Guys, we a Hoff. Get ready for this fall, buddy.
That's right. I can't wait. And we were saying, you know what? They really need a veteran receiver. They need somebody to help Amari Cooper. And, you know, we never really were able to do anything about it. And I think potentially Andrew Berry might be thinking, hey, we don't want that to happen again, because we know how great Miles is. And we feel really good about Dalvin Tomlinson in the middle. But, like, to allow Miles to be at his best, which is NFL Defensive Player of the Year, he needs to have somebody on the other side. Otherwise, I don't care how great you are, if you're getting double teamed and you're getting the slide every single time and the quarterback can always move away from you because there's no heat coming from the other side, like, he'll never be at his best and he's going to get frustrated. And that's the last thing you want, is your defensive leader, your best player on your team, to get frustrated. So I think being able to pull that off was awesome, because I remember playing against him when he was in Baltimore, and he was their best pass rusher for a number of years. And he's big and physical, and he's tough. I think he's exactly the type of guy that Jim Schwartz would want on his defense. And I know, you know, you get older, you maybe don't have as much of a burst as you used to have, but you can still rush the passer. You can still impact the quarterback, and teams can't just leave you one-on-one. And I think that was the most important thing. They needed a guy that, maybe if you slide to him or you add a double team, like, he's probably not going to get home, But if you leave him one-on-one, you're going to have problems. And that really opens up things for those other guys on that defensive line.
You know, Hoff, before a couple of segments before we had you on, we had Bubba Ventrone on, your former teammate. It was the first time I got a chance to meet. Yeah. First time I got a chance to meet him face to face. I'd seen him in the building, but in terms of, he came to the undisclosed location and we sat down and had a conversation. And as he was walking off, I said to him, I said, man, you're gonna be a head coach. Like, he's got that juice, Joe. He does. Did he have that as a player? He's really impressive.
He did. You know, he didn't play a whole lot on defense. He would kind of fill in the secondary a little bit, but he was one of the core special teams guys, and he was, you know, one of those special teams captain type guys that people look to because he always just did everything right, you know. And those are the guys that get respect, they get attention, and people pay attention to what you have to say. If you're always in the building, you're doing the right things, you're working as hard as you possibly can, so they see you put in the time. And then all of a sudden, you know, he wasn't always the loudest guy, which is, you know, normal as a special teams player. You're not going to be the loudest guy in the locker room because you don't have the most prominent position. But when he spoke up, people listened, and you could tell that that trajectory, if he wanted to go into coaching, was going to be eventually probably someday as a head coach. And I was surprised. I thought he was probably going to be the guy that was going to get the interim job in Indy last year.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the reason, like, a lot of the coaches on the staff were maybe a little bit rubbed the wrong way. Not only did they hire somebody who wasn't a coach, but they didn't hire Bubba and give him an opportunity because everybody saw in the building the type of leadership he had and the type of head coach he was going to be someday. And if he would have gotten that opportunity, maybe in Indy, he might be still staying there as a head coach. But thankfully, Jim Irsay didn't listen to anybody. And now we get one of the best special teams coaches in the NFL and Bubba Ventrone.
I just love the juice. I mean, he's just he's shot out of a cannon, man. Like, it was just refreshing to talk to him. I was really, really impressed with him. How is you know, I was down at the Hall of Fame again this weekend for Moral Lacrosse. I feel like I'm there every 2 weeks. And you're on the side of the building still. You still look great, buddy. How's the speech coming? Have you started working on it? Where are you with that?
It's good. We got the first draft in the books. Dan Murphy, Brown's PR guy, is helping me out. And now it's just kind of going back and forth and just making sure that your timing is right? Because nobody wants you to drone on. You want to make sure you hit all the right thank yous. A little bit of humor in there and make sure the crowd's still awake when you're done. So I think it's been fun, and we still got a little bit of time, but things are going pretty well with that. And actually, the interesting thing that has been kind of fun is going back and forth with the sculptor, because I sat out there in Utah a few weeks ago, which was cool. And they kind of went from almost nothing to maybe 80% completed. And then I would say every couple of days, he'll send me a new video and say, hey, what do you think? What do you think we need to change? And it's weird because obviously I'm not a sculptor, so I have no idea how to explain something, but I'll be like, I don't know, the lips look a little bit goofy. And then I'll send it to my wife. And then of course she'll have much better feedback than I will. And then you send it back to the sculptor, Ben Hammond, out there in Utah. And actually this past weekend, he sent me what we all thought is going to be the final deal. So he said, the next time you see this, you're going to be pulling off the cape.
Wow.
And it's going to be in bronze in Canton. So that was kind of an exciting moment.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That is very, very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. It's can't, I mean, there's no time like summer in Ohio. It's we thrive here, but at the same time, we want these days to be special, but can't wait. That's going to be a fun week in Canton, my friend. Thank you so much for your time today, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bo.
All right, the great Joe Thomas, the Hoff on the Twisted Tea Hotline, brought to you by Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea, official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns. Keep it Twisted Cleveland on that side of things. Yeah, very good stuff with the Hoff, and that is going to be here quickly. We start camp the 22nd of – there were 2 months from the start of camp.
Oh, my God.
Down in the Greenbrier. That's
that's where true. You're at. That's very real.
Yeah, yeah.
Little Browns news.
Hit me.
The Browns have now signed all 7 of their draft picks. DeJuan Jones has just inked. He is good to go, under contract and ready. I was unaware that – I don't know why I felt like there wasn't league meetings this week, but there are league meetings this week, and there's news out of the league meetings week. The NFL has approved a rule allowing a team to designate a roster spot on an emergency third quarterback.
Okay.
Couple of important rules. That player must be on the 53-man roster. It cannot be a practice squad call-up. That player can only play if the top two QBs are injured. No benchings.
Okay.
So does that mean you have to have three QBs active?
I don't know. I can't.
I feel like yes.
It feels like it's an exemption so that you can have three active and it won't cost against your normal active roster is what it seems like to me.
Well, that was the original tweet that
I
saw
from
Rap Sheet.
You can keep and protect three of them, right?
Yeah. It says the NFL bylaw on allowing a third QB to be active without burning a roster spot was approved. Now, it doesn't. It's not worded that way in the other stuff that I saw, but that's the tweet from Rap Sheet.
Okay.
So it sounds like we're in a good place.
Yeah.
Like Christian McCaffrey won't have to warm up anymore at
QB. Right.
I
mean, that was the one that was the death of it, was that Niners game. That was the tough one. I also saw this morning around the league from Adam Schefter. The five players suspended in the April, those were the Detroit Lions. The NFL now investigating a second wave of potential violations
that
of its gambling
policy.
That makes
me feel not great.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to end up being like very similar to what has happened with the league's stance on marijuana. Like, as long as you're not betting on the NFL and you're not betting on college football, then
which,
I don't know how you're going to
– which is very similar. Like, in baseball, or at least at the NBA level, I think you could bet on every team except your own. Like, if you told us, hey, you can't bet on any football, college, pro, USFL, XFL,
yeah.
You can't bet on any football.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it should be, probably. I would accept that more than, hey, you can't bet on anything.
I agree. I think there's just going to be more of this. There's too many states where it's legal, and it just doesn't make any sense. So I think that that's going to be kind of where that goes. You mentioned you and I haven't talked about the PGA Championship.
No.
There were two things that I think stuck with me most watching the PGA Championship this weekend, and certainly Koepka and his greatness was obviously a very, very big part of that. But then, you mentioned this a little bit. Were we on air with that, or was that off air in regards to Michael Block? We talked about it off air. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, Drew was in here. And that what Michael Block did throughout the weekend. So this is – if you missed this, this was a club pro – who not only made the cut at the PGA Championship, he finished 15th. He aced the 15th hole in the final round, paired with Rory McIlroy, for crying out loud. Then he got up and down on 18 to finish 15th, which netted him $288,000. But more importantly, as if something could be more important than that, it gifted him into the PGA Championship next year at Valhalla, so he will get to play in it again. In addition to that, it landed him a spot this week at Colonial.
Yep.
And then at the RBC in Canada the week after the Memorial Tournament down in Columbus is in next week. And then he's at the RBC after that. I would not at all be surprised, by the way, if the Memorial offered him an exemption after what happened this weekend. It wouldn't surprise me in any way if they did that.
If he goes out and does anywhere close to what he did this weekend,
yeah,
the Memorial should jump all over.
They should, yeah. I just can't even – I mean, it really was a tin cup moment. The guy aced in the final round of the PGA Championship paired with Rory McIlroy.
And, like, dunked it.
Dunked it.
I'm not even
on
sure
the fly.
If it really did anything else other than just go in.
Well, not only that, Rory had to tell him it went in.
Yeah.
Because he didn't see it. He just heard the roar, so he didn't know if it was
the
close.
The video, he's walking down the fairway looking at the patrons going, did that go in?
Did it go in?
He didn't believe Rory.
No. Two viral moments were great from it. Number one, the one where he's at the media gaggle after his third round, and one of the guys informs him that he's paired with Rory, and it's like a mix of, like, terrified, excited, exasperated, like all of it, mostly excited.
Yes.
But that was really, really cool. And then the moment that they captured when the guy from the Colonial who runs a Colonial called him and said, we're inviting you down on a sponsor's exemption, and he was like, don't say what you're going to say to me or I'm going to cry. And then he says it to him, and you see the emotion of it. It's
he's
just,
like,
it was
awesome.
Let
me ask my boss. He's right here holding a tequila.
Right.
He's fine. Yeah, he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He can go do it. So that was awesome. And then the other thing I thought is there are two segments of people who watch golf. There are people like Sometime Z and like the Ambassador of Cool who watch every tournament, who have fantasy golf and are paying attention week in and week out to it, the diehards. And they're probably dialed in to LIV versus PGA.
Sure.
The vast majority of people who watch golf watch the majors, maybe a little bit of TPC, maybe a little bit of Memorial if you have Central Ohio ties. In the old days, you'd watch Firestone. You watch, you know, some of the other big ones that are out there, but not much. Mostly you're watching the majors, right? Those people are not invested in any way to PGA Tour versus LIV. They're not. They don't care. It doesn't affect them. If you're looking for proof of that, just listen to the crowds on Saturday and Sunday, especially Sunday for Koepka. Like, there was no – he was in no way, shape, or form a villain in any way. And people do not care about it. They don't. The vast majority.
No.
So anytime that, like, I thought that, like, the Golf Channel specifically, and I understand that they're in business with the PGA, but I thought that their coverage of it was so slanted by the PGA LIV stuff. And even the guys who are on that beat, on that golf beat, and I understand that they're there every day, but like Rory, what we talked about, Rory was exasperated by the questioning of it last week at his media availability. And that's done. It's done. When I'm watching Koepka on Sunday after I got done with all the youth sports, I'm watching the back nine. It's just Brooks Koepka. And what he is, to me, is he's the best golfer since Tiger Woods. When he's at his best, he's better than anybody else.
All he does is win majors.
That's it. He's just clutch. He's in the mix always. It's been so long since we've seen like Rory at his best. It's probably been about 10 years since we've really – like 14. It's probably the last time we really saw him at his best. Koepka at his best is better than anybody else's best.
Yeah.
He's a machine, that guy is.
Yeah. Put your settle your differences.
Yeah.
Get these guys all playing together again.
Well, I don't know that there's a path for that, but there's – I did see like a back and forth about, with Brad Faxon and Brandel Chambly on the Golf Channel about like Ryder Cup, and Faxon's like, he's an American playing golf. Like, what difference does it make what tour he's on? He just won the PGA Championship. He's one of the 12 best Americans.
You need him on Team USA.
Yeah, if you care.
Yeah, exactly.
If you care, you do.
Yep.
For sure. So I thought that was good theater. It's interesting, like LeBron and the Lakers are, well, they'll get swept tonight or they'll lose in the gentleman's sweep in Denver on, I guess it would be Wednesday. Either way, they have no chance. It's really interesting, though, because all of those games have been great games. Denver just, it feels like no matter what LA does, Denver has the answer, but they've all been competitive, which is not what we can say about Boston and Miami.
No. As good as the entire NBA playoffs were,
yeah.
The conference finals have been.
Well, the crazy thing, it's 3-0, but all of the games have been tight in the last 2 minutes.
Way.
They could have gone either way. It's interesting. They could have gone either way, but they couldn't, if that makes sense. There, at no point did I think the Lakers were going to win any of those three games. I watched them all. At no point. Denver always had the correct answer to the test. And I don't think, unlike like Boston's a total meltdown failure, I don't think it's a meltdown failure for the Lakers.
No.
I think that they're reaching their ceiling.
They had a play-in game just
right.
To get into the playoffs.
Right, right. And they had – this team's been together for about 2.5 months. So, to me, like, they're maxing out, and it's just Denver's just really good.
Yeah.
Is kind of the operation on that. It was a very, very fun sports weekend. All right, coming up next, we will get some perspective on the great Jim Brown from the great Doug Deacon. That is coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Hey, Browns fans, you want to experience the 2023 Browns season in some of the best seats in Cleveland Browns Stadium? Visit leacom.edu/Browns. Your best chance to win two field seats for the 2023 season, courtesy of Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. Sweepstakes ends on August 30th. And we head out on the Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea Hotline, official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns. Keep it twisted, Cleveland. The great Doug Deacon, the legend, joining us. Deke, this is the news dropped on Friday of Jim's passing. You've been at countless events, Browns Legends gatherings over the years with Jim. How did it hit you, and what can you tell us of your relationship with one of the greatest to ever play the game?
Well, first off, I was kind of tipped off a couple of weeks in advance. Somebody, one of his friends, had said that he was not doing well. And you know, you think of a guy like Jim Brown, you think of Juan Destructible, and, you know, it's, you know, sad to see, you know, one of the greatest of the game pass away. And, you know, obviously when you say Jim Brown, you immediately think of the Cleveland Browns, and they go hand in hand. And Jim, I first met Jim during the Players Association strike in 82 out in Las Vegas, and I got to know him. And he was a guy that... he liked to challenge you. If you said something and he'd challenge you on it, just to, you know, see if you were full of it, or if you were, you know, knew what you were talking about. And you know, he was intimidating, you know, be it on the field or off the field. But he did a lot of good things for a lot of people, and helped a lot of people out.
You know, Deke, that's interesting what you just said. So he was at the player in 82. Even though he was playing for all those years,
Well, I think he was a speaker that year, and you know, was in Las Vegas, and you know, a lot of guys don't turn down trips to Las Vegas. But and then you know, when Belichick brought him back here, you know, when he was the head coach, you know, because Bill had a history of the game and appreciated what Jim had done, and you know, there'd been a separation between him and Art Modell, and you know, Belichick, you know, brought him back into the clubhouse, and you got to know him. And I'd take him out to the golf course, and we'd play. And, you know, I think Jim was probably an 8 or 9 handicap at the time. And I'd tell whoever we were playing, he was a 15, and they didn't give a rat's ass that, you know, what his handicap was. They were just playing with Jim Brown.
And wait a second. You're sandbagging with Jim Brown?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Hey, God
bless
you.
These guys have been taking my money all this time. I might as well get some of theirs.
That's amazing. That is absolutely great. So did he? That's amazing too. So he was that proficient a golfer. We heard about the lacrosse and know the football. I didn't realize he was that good of a golfer.
Oh yeah, he was. I mean, it was, you name it, he could do it. The story. Where there was a, you know, golf course over on the east side when he was, you know, actually playing for the Browns, he'd play, and he'd play in money games over there. And I think he did okay, you know, with himself as far as playing. But if I called somebody and said, hey, you want to play golf on Saturday? I don't know. Who you got? I say, yeah, Jim Brown. I'll play. And, you know, the one guy that was a good friend of mine, he just had the smartest mouth in the world. He was in our foursome one time. I said, oh boy, this ain't going to be good. Mr. Brown, can I get your ball? Mr. Brown, can I wipe your clubs? Yep. he just turned into something. But I mean, you know, anybody that ever met him, I mean, you know, he was an imposing figure, and he's one of the, well, if not the greatest of all time. And Jim was, he did a lot of good things for a lot of people too. I mean, it wasn't just Jim Brown, the football player.
Oh no, far from it. No, there were so many layers to it. And he was one of those guys, Deke, from the standpoint of even really great players were humbled, it seemed, by being in his presence. Some, you were obviously someone who was greatly familiar with him and became a friend, but in terms of, it was interesting. You see him amongst other NFL greats. Even he even separates, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I think, you know, well, I mean, when they talk about the GOAT of running backs, you know, it's Jim Brown, and you might even be the GOAT of football players. And, you know, one of the other people that I knew that, you know, was similar to that, you know, the GOAT of linebackers was Dick Butkus. And, you know, Dick on the field was just a, you know, total animal. But off the field, Dick was a great guy. But he's, I know in my career, he's the only guy I would never cut. And, you know, out of respect for the fact that he also went to Illinois, but also out of the fact that I knew he might chase me off the field if I did.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you gotta be smart with those things.
Oh, and, you know, and Dick, like, you know, Jim, I mean, you get him in a conversation and they're just nice people. I mean, there's a lot of thought in what they say. And Jim, you know, always chose his words. And I remember back when, you know, people were kneeling during the protest of, you know, the American national anthem. And I think Jim spoke to the team, and the way I understood it, what he said, what he told me, he said was, respect your country, respect your flag. And I got no problem with that.
Yeah, you have the right to say whatever you want on any of those fronts when you're Jim Brown. You know, one thing, it's so linked when you think of him, you know, obviously Paul Brown, Jim Brown. I mean, when you think, and it's odd that they're both last, obviously named for Paul, but just from the standpoint of both, like, linked forever. And I think we had Joe Thomas on at the top of the hour, and we were talking about, you know, just Jim's size and the fact that he was bigger than a lot of his offensive linemen. Like, it's hard now to wrap our head around that, isn't it, Deke?
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, he was, what, about 230 pounds, and your linebackers weighed about 215 back then.
Right.
And, you know, I think, unfortunately, for some of his linemen, you know, Jim was so good that, you know, people didn't give credit to some of the offensive linemen. It took Gene Hickerson well beyond the time to get into the Hall of Fame. And I think you could make a, you know, case for Dick Schaffrath. Dick was a great player, played in a lot of games with Jim, and, you know, never got that recognition. You know, John Wooden was a great player. You know, that whole crew there, you know, that was a darn good offensive line.
Yeah,
and you had Jim Ray Smith, and you know, John Morrow. I mean, the combination of a great running back and a great offensive line, you know, that was a pretty formidable team. And, you know, the Browns have, you know, the great history of running backs. You know, you start with Marion Motley, and then you got Bobby Mitchell, and you got Jim, and you got Leroy, and, you know, and today you got Nick Chubb.
Yeah, it's something. There's a lineage there. It's one of the cool things, you know, Deke, you've been omnipresent in the organization for so many years now, I'm obviously relatively new to it, but it's one of those things where you never know who you're going to run into in the building. And I'm sure you always got an advance warning if Jim was going to be in town, if you guys were palling around. But just for the rest of us, it was a big deal when he was in the building. And it was exciting when he was in the building. It was known that Jim Brown was in the building.
Yeah. And I, you know, when he passed away, I had some people that, you know, I'd introduced him to, and, you know, that's a memory of a lifetime for them. You know, you met the greatest of all time. And, you know, he was always cordial to people. You know, like I said, he would challenge you, though. If you said something and he wasn't sold on it, he'd say, well, what do you mean by that? And then
that's
he explained it. And, you know, he just, you know, he's pretty much spoke what he thought.
That's the important thing. He would call you out. I'd seen him do this where if he would challenge it quick, wouldn't he, Deke? If you said something that he was going to find out if you were a man of consequence or if it was just nonsense, he would hold your feet to the fire on it.
Oh yeah, no, you weren't gonna smoke him with BS. That's for sure.
No,
you know, he'd say, "Now, what do you mean by that? Or how did that? You know?" And he always had the, in other words, he was listening to what you were saying. You know, a lot of people.
That's right.
You know, give you the shoulder and say, "Okay," but you know, Jim would say, "I'm not you. How do you mean that?" So you know, that was Jim, and on the golf course, he liked to compete, obviously, and he was a good golfer. And as I said, we'd sandbag with him, but he also had this habit: if you were standing, anywhere behind him, he'd ask you to move like he could see you. And I'm going, oh, you got to be kidding, guy. But no, he had a good golf game, too. And, you know, he loved to play.
I'm not sure that he was bad at much of anything, honestly, Deke.
No,
he was pretty damn good actor.
He was great in any given Sunday.
I mean, lacrosse?
Yeah, lacrosse. I mean, you know, the guy, and he played basketball. You know, it was before my time, but, I mean, when the Browns used to have that team that would go around and play, I'm sure, you know, if Jim Brown was playing, the gym would be full, that's for sure.
Deke, I'll get you out of here on this one. As someone who knew him well, what's something that you would want our fans to know about Jim Brown that maybe they didn't?
He had some troubles in his life, but, you know, I think mm-hmm. when you get down to it, you know, Jim, you know, cared about his fellow man. And you know, I think, you know, the players that played with him respected him. And, you know, I think that's when you play, that's the ultimate goal, is to be respected by your teammates. And, I think his teammates definitely respected Jim. And, you know, we were very fortunate, or Cleveland was very fortunate, to have the greatest of all time, you know, line up in the backfield here for 9 years.
Deke, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on today. It's so cool to have you, buddy. Great talking to you again. Thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Okay, anytime. Okay.
That is the great Doug Deacon, of course, Browns legend and former radio analyst, one of the all-timers calling in on the Twisted Tea Hotline. And, of course, Deke is sandbagging with Jim Brown. That's the most, of course.
That's on brand for Mr. Deacon.
So great.
I don't know if it was for Jim Brown.
Oh, yeah, he's
but
an
it
eight.
Was totally – I want to know if Jim knew that Deke was setting everything up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's an 8. Or he's a 15. God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That absolutely killed me. All right, so much more to come. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Coming soon to Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
The Cleveland Browns 2023 schedule is here. Get your single game tickets now for all of the great matchups at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/tickets to purchase today. That was great with Hoff and with Deke to reflect on Jim Brown and their recollections of him and of course Deke palling around. I mean, that was just priceless.
We were just talking about it in break, like that. Was Jim in on it, or was
it's
that
all
Deke
in play.
Just rolling with the punches?
Jim, I think
follow my lead. You're a 15.
It's all in play. It's all in play with Deke. I mean, I can just see it. It's just perfect. Absolutely was. So, hey, if you're I would say our digital team, our writers, the video guys, they have put some really cool stuff up on the site. And if you're a younger person, you're trying to wrap your head around the football life on Jim Brown is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I wonder if there. I don't know if that's been. I wonder if that's got to been replayed. But if you can find that on the NFL Network, that's been very, very good. Do you remember when ESPN did their the Sports Century list?
Yes.
Where did Jim end up on? It was the 50 greatest athletes of the 20th century. And Jim Brown was 4th on that list. The only people he looked up to were Muhammad Ali, Babe Ruth, and Michael Jordan. That's it. That's the list.
And Muhammad Ali, I think if you asked him back in the day, might have put Jim Brown ahead of himself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying. The next football player on this list was Joe Montana, was 25th. So, heavy stuff. There's a lot of good stuff out there if you want to educate yourself if you don't know.
And you should.
And you should, yeah. Yep, Absolutely. All right, the next level is coming up next. We are back tomorrow. Gerard in here at the undisclosed location. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.